The deaths of David Palmer, Tony Almeida, and Michelle Desler. They were friends of mine.
That's the way it works.
Jack, Logan doesn't confess. How far are you actually willing to go?
As far as I have to.
Welcome to 24 Under Review, your one-stop shop for all things 24.
Now, let's rejoin our regularly scheduled podcast.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode number 3 for day 6, covering 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. Just as a little note, this is the schedule for the podcast. We'll probably get them out by Thursday or Friday following the episode. And also, with this episode, we are going to do a pretty big update to the site. So watch for that. It's a really nice, clean interface that we have. Also, please check out 24boards.com, your one place to talk all things 24. That also has a little area for spoilers, although I still do not have the guts to go in there and destroy the next Monday. Also, we are trying to get Brett from 24 Real Time, or what was 24 Real Time last season, to have a Skype chat with us, so we'll see if that works out, and if so, you should be getting that in the next few weeks, and we'll give you updates every podcast. With that, let's get right into today's episode.
Previously on 24.
Jack teams up with Hamir al-Assad, who is a terrorist, but claims that he has come to America to lay down arms. Well, anyway, he is responsible for hundreds or thousands of deaths of innocent people in his 2 decades of terrorism, and he is granted immunity in exchange for his continued help in preventing the terrorist attacks and his efforts to get his organization, as well as many others that follow his example, to lay down arms. With the help of the Wallace family, a few of which are being held hostage by one of the men associated with the attacks, Jack finds the location of the suitcase nuke. While we're on the subject of that, Wayne Palmer, on Fayed's demand, releases over 100 very dangerous terrorists, one of which is a nuclear scientist. He has the knowledge to assemble a suitcase nuke on site. He escapes, and with the help of the sergeant at the prison, a CTU TAC team arrives at the location where the suitcase nuke is being assembled, and they take out 2 guys, and then one of the men in the room where it's being assembled sees them right as they finish assembly. When the CTU team storms in, they manage to hit the trigger despite the hundreds of rounds being fired into the area, so that was a big stroke of luck for the terrorists, but they did detonate the nuke, decimating 1 square mile, and radiation will kill many more.
The following takes place between 10 a.m. and 11 a.m.
The team at the White House is watching reports of the bomb in Valencia, which is a suburb of Los Angeles. Luckily, the wind is blowing radiation away from the highly populated area. Karen learns that there are 4 more nuclear weapons, and the Secret Service moves the president to the bunker, although he makes it clear he wants to give a televised speech to the public within the hour. Milo then gets word that all of the field agents who were in the area with the hostiles were killed in the blast, which that's obvious, but I do remember hearing that all were killed, so obviously I was mistaken, because Jack had a TAC team just a few hundred feet away from him, so if they died, then I'm shocked that he didn't. But we'll move on. Karen calls Buchanan from the bunker and is relieved to find out that the CTU office is not affected, but Buchanan cannot confirm whether Fayed was killed in the blast, but they do confirm that the scientist was killed in the blast. Chloe is shocked when she finds out that Curtis is dead, and she tells Morris that Jack quit because he was forced to kill Curtis. But he didn't actually quit. We'll see why in a few minutes here. Mass panic ensues on the streets of Granada Hills, which is where Jack was. And Faya drives in a van and almost hits a man, or a woman, to a man named Darren McCarthy on the phone. And he seems to be definitely related in this. He says Fayad tells him that the nuke went off by accident. And McCarthy isn't too happy because that's his hometown. And then goes on to say he's leaving for Vegas. Fayad tells him he needs to get people that can get the equipment to reprogram the triggers in the four nukes he has remaining. And he is reluctant, but then when Fayad tells him he'll double the amount agreed upon, he says he will try to find someone to do it. Fayad drives by, only a few hundred yards away from Jack. We see a man running around frantically asking people for their help because a helicopter has crashed into his roof. He finally gets to Jack, who is just staring at the mushroom cloud, and then we get news that one of the men in the helicopter is dead and the other is unconscious. Jack immediately follows him and he finds his way onto the roof. He then goes on to try to open the door of the helicopter, but it's jammed. Good old resourceful Jack finds what looks to be the top of an antenna and forces the door open. He then pulls the man out, and about 2 or 3 seconds later the tail falls off. And then the entire plane falls about, or the entire helicopter falls about 20 feet and blows up. Now, my local news station, which just so happens to be Fox, did a little special on this, saying how it was one of their bigger stunts. It used 6 gallons of fuel and 2 8-ounce sparkers, I think it was. I'm not sure on that. But it created a 60-foot-high, 40-foot-big explosion, and it took them over a week to set the entire scene up on site. So that was mainly consumed by getting the helicopter right there on the edge. But that was a pretty good scene. And also, Jack mentioned that there was a pulse, which I would think is an electromagnetic pulse, but had it been, then nobody's electronics within that area would be working. That includes cars, computers, microwaves, anything that has circuitry would be fried and would not be fixable. So this is, once again, one of those times where you just have to play along and believe it is real. Jack calls Buchanan and tells him to send a car. Buchanan questions him, saying that he thought he quit, but Jack says, no, not after this, which the White House has now compiled a list of countries that might be funding Fayad, and they all claim to not be at all associated with the attacks. An admiral advises the president to bomb all of these countries to send a message to them, but Wayne says he will only retaliate against the enemy. Karen reports that CTU assesses that the bomb was meant for a more populated area. They just blew it up because they were about to all get killed. And the scientist, Numar, was responsible for triggering the bomb, and he was killed. Fayad is still in his van on his laptop, and just as he closes it, they pan around, and we see 4 more silver briefcases, which are obviously the suitcase nukes. Assad also now is arriving at CTU, and he tells Buchanan that although he may see him as an enemy, he assures him that today he is not. He then sticks his hand out to shake Buchanan's hand, and Bill just tells him to follow, and he does. Buchanan briefs Assad on the 4 other bombs at large. Assad had no idea that Fayad had nuclear weapons, but he did send Fayad to meet with a Russian general a year ago about nuclear bombs in a cache, but nothing went through at that time. Chloe starts looking up the general's name, Dmitry Gradenko. Morse has compiled a list, and it only took him 6 minutes, of men who conducted business with Gradenko. One of them is Philip Bauer, the chairman of BXJ Technologies, and it's Jack's father. Bill calls Jack and tells him about his father's link, and Jack hasn't spoken to his father in over 9 years, but he wants to question his father alone. At the Anacostia faculty in Washington, D.C., where Waleed is being held, FBI agents inform Sandra that Waleed will be wearing a wire. The FBI agents make a show. They take him in to the bathroom where they supposedly do this all for show, but they start beating him, and it didn't really look like they were doing it for show. They were definitely beating him pretty hard, but all of Salim and his five or six other friends are right outside the bathroom watching Waleed get beaten up. The FBI agents move Waleed into a more discreet area of the bathroom so that the men outside can't see what he is saying and what they're showing him. And they tell him what is happening, that, and they stuff a little transponder, like Jack always wears, in his ear, and then show him on a PDA the name of Abu Fayed and tell him he's going to have to say they were questioning him about that. Afterwards, Salam goes to Waleed, but Waleed doesn't want to talk. This gives the agents confirmation that they have a clear signal from the wire. Jack phones his dad's house, which according to Fox is in San Marino, and he gets Sam, the servant. His dad had left and mysteriously didn't take his cell phone, and he didn't tell anyone where he was going either. Sam said he tried to find him through Jack's brother as well. Where's Gray? Jack asks, and this is foreshadowing, definitely. Liddy, head of security at the Bauer Mansion, overhears Sam's conversation via some pretty intense cameras set up. There were quite a few. And then he phones Graham, who appears to be Jack's brother. He was the leader of the Bluetooth group, as Brett from 24 Real Time and now Fox called him. Isn't that the irony? You've got one brother saving the world five times and gonna be a sixth, and the other man is behind one of these attacks. Well, we'll figure out what all this means later. Graham comments, "Damn it, we should have killed him when we had the chance instead of turning him over to the Chinese." And then Liddy responds, "We tried." So I don't know what he had to do with it, but obviously something. Jack calls Graham, who acts completely surprised. Graham claims he and Philip attempted to get Jack out of China, and he also says he has no idea where their father is and promises to call back. Jack calls Chloe to look up his brother's address because he doesn't want Graham to know that he is coming. Graham returns to his house and is greeted by his teenage son, Josh. There's a little speculation that's actually Jack's son with Graham's wife, Marilyn. And Marilyn is shocked that Jack is back in town. Graham accuses her of still having feelings for Jack, whom she used to date before they were married. And then she comments, "It's extremely unattractive to be insecure," is what I think she said. The White House staffers argue over the wording of the president's speech. The lady writing the speech believes that they should just say it was a terrorist attack, whereas Lennox believes that they should use it, say it's nuclear attack, and it's the perfect opportunity to act more aggressively. And once again, this is definitely his agenda right here to lock a lot of the Middle Easterners up. As McCarthy works on the phone looking for a bomb expert, he picks up his girlfriend Rita. She is eager to flee the city after telling him that he should have just picked her up from her house because she was on the corner looking like a hooker. McCarthy tells her that they have a change of plans and are staying because there's a lot of money on the table. McCarthy calls Fayed to tell them that he will have someone for Fayed within the hour. Nadia is convinced that Assad really does want peace. Buchanan thanks Assad for his intel and then sticks his hand out to shake, and they both shake. And I found this to be very symbolic of what is to come. They then ship him off to Washington on order of the president. Milo gets word the FBI has wired a man inside the Anacostia detention facility, and that there is an active cell in the detention facility, and that might lead them to Fayed. As Salim defends Walid as, quote, one of them, to his fellow prisoners, they are not too sure about him. Sandra argues with the FBI that Walid shouldn't be participating in this, and the agent says that Walid is doing the right thing, and if it works, he will have done a very courageous deed for the country. And the guards on the side know what's happening, so if they see anything starting to heat up, they know to protect him. Salim approaches Walid and then sits down next to him, asking him a few questions about what they wanted. Walid tells him that they found a number in his wallet, and he eventually gives in and says it was Abu Fayed. With this, Salim invites him over to join the other inmates, which is odd considering that Salim claims to not know who Fayed is. Jack shows up at Graham's mansion, and Graham hugs Jack, but Jack doesn't really respond. They haven't seen each other since Terry's funeral, so in 24 time, judging by what they tell you at the start of each season, that's 7 or 8 years. Jack demands to know where his father is, but Graham avoids the topic. Once they have said a few words to Josh and Marilyn, Jack takes Graham into his room. After Graham starts telling a story of all things, Jack just slugs him in the head, rips the actual power wire of a lamp off, and ties him to a chair. Jack grabs him by the throat and threatens him to hurt him if he doesn't give up information. Graham says he's already getting hurt, and Jack says, "Trust me, I'm not." Before Wayne goes on television, he confesses to Lennox he doesn't want to let the public see how scared he is. Lennox assures him that bravado would be no more appropriate than fear. Despite Jack's demands for the truth, Graham swears he has no idea where his father is. Jack is not swayed. He takes a plastic bag and begins to suffocate his brother. And with that, the episode ends. As always, now we will have the some of the comments from 24 boards, which is a great place. I recommend all you guys go there and get an account. One of the main topics is Greg Bauer. David Palmer says, "So we meet Greg Bauer, Jack's brother, but he has been in previous season. Wasn't he the bad guy behind the scenes with President Logan last season? I think Greg was calling the shots last season, and Logan got caught, not Greg." And yes, that is in fact true. And then CTU Montreal responds, "Wow, Graham is Jack's brother, remember him? Yes, he was in the last day. He was heading a Bluetooth group, as Brett used to call him, or them. That group was blackmailing Logan. Interesting. I guess Jack has some serious family issues. Also, the way Jack looked at Graham's son and getting the underlying history between Graham's wife Marilyn and Jack, I dare say that the son is really Jack's, and I think is Kim as a half-brother." That doesn't make sense right there. I guess he thinks of Kim as a half-sister. And on to another subject I think that we should touch on, which is, shouldn't Audrey know by now? Oscar the Grouch writes, "Where's Audrey? Is she still with the DOD? And wouldn't she know that Jack is back?" Jimmy Jive responds that Jack asked neither she nor Kim find out about Jack's being alive. It would be funny if a news camera caught him on the helicopter rescue, and it airs it, and we see Kim or Audrey watching it on TV, and they notice Jack. Now, the first point is valid, although I do think that was just because he thought he would be in America for a few hours and then he'd be dead. But now that he has escaped and is saving the country once again, we'll see how that plays out. I think that he will call Audrey, maybe Kim, and tell them that he is alive. David Palmer says he believes that the actress that plays Audrey signed on to a show called The Nine, so she may not be in this season, even though I think The Nine is not anymore a show. I do have a comment on that. Audrey did sign on to play a guest role, so that means just a few times. So don't be too shocked when she comes on halfway through the season or maybe a little bit later. Lastly, David Palmer has a comment for a thread for Curtis. He comments, "When we saw Jack shoot Curtis, it seemed as though Curtis was dying, but did he really die? What do you think?" Son of a Binge says, "It looks like Jack got him right in the jugular. I think he's dead." Nico Pucci writes, "Next time, Curtis shouldn't talk so much and just shoot the guy already. I don't think there'll be a next time because I think he's dead. But just a word of advice, when you're holding someone hostage and someone else has a gun pointed at you, how about standing directly behind your hostage instead of having your head all the way over their shoulders so that the other person doesn't have a clear shot?" Which is 100% valid. I don't know why people do that when they have hostages. They just leave their head as an open shot, which doesn't make very much sense. Bullwinkle says, "Here's the definite answer." And it goes to Fox's profiles page, where Curtis Manning has a big deceased stamp over his picture. We have seen this before, and it turned out to be false, but that was only once or twice. So I wouldn't be too confident I would be pretty shocked if that is false. But then again, they did sign on Curtis as a recurring role, so that usually means that they're going to be in quite a few episodes. So, you know, we got some conflicting data here, but we'll see later this season. Well, that wraps up the comments, but we recommend you go check out some other 24 podcasts, such as 24cast, which you can find in iTunes. They are the number one 24 podcast in iTunes. And they deserve it. They have a pretty good podcast, although it's not 100% serious. It is very enjoyable. I always wait for the next episode. Also, 24 the Podcast by Joe, although that is primarily a spoiler podcast, they did post the first 12 minutes of episode 5, which after the episode I did watch, and it was perfect, correct. And lastly, Two Guys Talking 24. These guys are amazing. They have done a few interviews with Joseph Hodges, the production designer for 24. So basically every set you see is designed by him. And they did get to interview him actually the morning after the season 6 premiere ended about what happened. So that was pretty cool. And you can find a link to all of these podcasts in our other podcast section, which you can find at our website. Well, that wraps things up for today, and until next week, enjoy.